Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about part 6, chapter 13, Kitty reckons all is well and he can stay another day if he wants. That was all I had for that last chapter. I am a Norwegian, said Levin's successes, and then the lovely letter from Kitty made me sit there reading the chapter with a smile on my lips. Well, that's nice. That's really nice. It's good to see things going someone's way, isn't it? Simply Productive said, agreed. A lovely morning, and then even without food, he nonetheless had a good rest of the day. All in all, a success. Success is good. Swim said, the mama fish. He said, Levin walks about 30 versts. A verst is an obsolete Russian unit of length defined as 500 sazen. This makes a verst equal to 1.06 kilometers, so 0.66 miles. So he walked about 30 kilometers, or about 20 miles. That's quite far. Simply Productive said, also, Anda, I'm wondering how things are there with the fires and all. Thank you for asking. The fires are raging out of control in Australia at the moment. I'm sure you've seen all on the news about that. Luckily, I'm safe. My family, friends, everyone's safe. We're pretty far from the nearest one. But it's still, you know, it's a catastrophe is what it is. It's a tragedy. So it's pretty eerie. There's a lot of smoke in the air, even here. I think I'm probably at least, I don't know, maybe 100 or 200 kilometers away from the nearest of the fires. And that's only in Victoria, where, you know, I live in Victoria. But if you go up a state to New South Wales, that's where most of the fires are. And in Queensland, it's pretty bad too. Yeah, we're not really near where it's really bad, but even still, the air is full of smoke. The sky is all grey and white, and it smells like smoke. If you go outside, you can just constantly smell smoke. It would seem like if you were looking in the sky in my town, it would seem like there's a bushfire in the town somewhere, but it's actually, you know, way, ages away. It's pretty amazing. And eerie. Usually, I'm in the Yarra Valley, which is prone to bushfires. Every summer we've got bushfire drama. And then I'm near the Murrindindi Shire, which is where a lot of my friends live out that way, and that's where the big fires were about 10 years ago. That, you know, a lot of people died and a lot of people lost their houses, and it was the last big tragic bushfire. And that area is fine as well at the moment. And so it feels strange, it feels eerie to know that there's all this going on, but we're just safe from it. And there's kind of nothing, we don't have to do any evacuating or anything like that. So I suppose that's good. I mean, for me, it's good. It's not good in general. It's obviously terrible. But it's pretty crazy, isn't it? I've been seeing, it's just, oh man, it's not the kind of thing you can ignore, obviously, and you wouldn't want to. And so I just keep coming across these pictures on like Instagram and stuff of just the saddest things. It's, oh man, it's pretty awful. Anyway. That's going on at the moment, the old bushfires. I don't know much what else to say about that. I suppose, like, it's January. It's just the start of bushfire season. We've got all the rest of January, all the rest of February to get through, and it only gets worse, you know, we're not at the hottest point of the year yet. We're not at the driest point. We're in trouble. It's going to get worse. Like, I'm saying this stuff about how it hasn't really reached my area. But in saying that, it's not far away. I mean, sorry, I shouldn't say it's not far away. It is far away. What I should say, the end is still far away. There's still a lot of time for a fire to start in our area or anywhere. So it's just scary. We're just on edge. The whole country's on edge. Like it's bad already. It's really bad. But the worst thing is that we're only, you know, halfway through summer. So, yeah. Anyway, shall we just read War and Peace? No, sorry. Shall we just read Anna Karenina? How about we do that? How about we read some Tolstoy? Chapter 14. Lighter note. On a lighter note, speaking of War and Peace, I've been sharing my Bogan translation over there at A Year of War and Peace, and getting just really good feedback. It just seems like people are really enjoying it, so I don't know. It's given me, put a bit of wind back in my sails, because I wrote book one of War and Peace. I translated book one, I should say. And just thought, I'll see how it goes. If people like it, I'll keep doing this project. If people aren't really into it, I won't do book two. Like, if no one cares, I'm not going to, you know, translate another 25 chapters of a book that no one cared about. The first 28 chapters. And so I released that a few months ago and just didn't really reach an audience. It just kind of sat there. Had maybe two or three people say they enjoyed it, which is good, but didn't really make a splash. And so I was a bit disheartened. I thought, oh, maybe this wasn't the best idea I've ever had. And I thought I'd just let it simmer on the back burner for a while and did other things. But then since that, since the new year, I should say, since the Year of War and Peace has restarted, a lot of people have been reading it and I've been getting a lot of really good feedback. Very, very positive, very kind words. So it's reinvigorated me in that sense. So, I don't know, I suppose my confidence is back with that book. Like, I thought it was great. I thought it was really funny. You know, it is my own work, so maybe I'm biased in that way. But I thought, oh, people are going to love this. And then when it just didn't really hit a mark, I thought, oh, maybe I was wrong. But now my confidence is back. And so I am recommending it again. I recommend it to all of you listening. I think you'll like it. Bogan, War and Peace. You can find it on my website, andalewis.com, if you are interested. Otherwise, let's read chapter 14. Next morning at 10 o'clock, Levin, having made the round of his farm, knocked at the door of Vasenka's room. "Enters," shouted Veselovsky. "Excuse me, I have only just finished my ablutions," he said, smiling, as he stood before Levin in his underclothes. "Please don't mind me," and Levin sat down by the window. "Have you slept well?" "Like the dead. What a day it is for shooting. What do you drink, tea or coffee?" "Neither. Nothing before lunch. I am really quite ashamed. I expect the ladies are already up. I would be fine to go for a walk now. You must show me your horses." When they had walked around the garden, visited the stables, and even done some gymnastics together on the parallel bars, Levin returned to the house with his guest and entered the drawing room with him. "We had fine sport and so many new impressions," said Veselovsky, approaching Kitty, who sat at the samovar. "What a pity ladies are deprived of that pleasure." "Well, what of it? He must say something of the mistress of the house," Levin told himself. He again thought he noticed something in the smile and the conquering air with which the visitor addressed Kitty. The princess, who sat at the other end of the table with Mary Vlasyevna and Oblonsky, called Levin and began a conversation about moving to Moscow for Kitty's confinement and taking her house there. Just as all the preparations for the wedding had been disagreeable to him, since they detracted by their significance from the majesty of what was taking place, so now the preparations for the coming birth, the time of which they were reckoning on their fingers, appeared to him yet more offensive. He always tried not to hear those conversations about the best way of swaddling the future infant, tried to turn away and not see those mysterious, endless knitted binders and three-cornered pieces of linen to which Dolly attached special importance, and all the rest. The birth of a son, he was certain it would be a son, which they promised him, but in which he still could not believe, so extraordinarily did it seem, appeared to him on the one hand such an immense and therefore impossible happiness, and on the other such a mysterious event, that this pretended knowledge of what was happening, going to happen, and consequent preparations as for something ordinary, something produced by human beings, seemed to him an indignity and a degradation. But the princess did not understand his feelings and attributed his unwillingness to think or speak about it to thoughtlessness and indifference, and therefore gave him no peace. She was now commissioning Oblonsky to see about a house and called Levin to her. "I don't know at all, princess. Do you think best?" he said. "You must decide when you will move." "I really don't know. I know that millions of children are born without Moscow and without doctors. Then why?" "Well, if that's..." "Oh, no, just as Kitty likes." "But one can't talk to Kitty about it. Why, do you want me to frighten her? You know, only this spring Natali Golitsyn died because she had a bad doctor." "I'll do whatever you tell me," he replied morosely. The princess began telling him, but he did not listen to her. Though this talk with the princess upset him, it was not that, but what he saw by the samovar which made him morose. "No, this is impossible," he thought, glancing occasionally at Vasenka, who was leaning toward Kitty and saying something with his handsome smile, and at Kitty, blushing and agitated. There was something impure in Vasenka's attitude, his look and his smile. Levin even saw something impure in Kitty's pose and smile, and again the light faded from his eyes. Again, as on the previous occasion, he suddenly, without the least interval, felt thrown from the height of happiness, peace and dignity, into an abyss of despair, malevolence, and degradation. Again, everyone and everything became revolting to him. "Well then, princess, let it be just as you think best," he said. "Oh, turning away, excuse me. Heavy is the autocrat's crown," said Oblonsky, a quotation from Pushkin's Boris Godunov. Banteringly, evidently alluding not only to the princess's conversation but also to the cause of Levin's agitation, which he had observed. "How late you are today, Dolly." They all rose to greet Dolly. Vasenka only rose for a moment, and with the absence of politeness to women which is characteristic of modern young men, barely bowed and again continued his conversation, laughing at something. "Masha has worn me out. She slept badly, and it is terribly capricious this morning," said Dolly. The conversation with Kitty began by Vasenka again dealt with Anna and with the question whether love can rise above social conditions. This conversation was unpleasant to Kitty and upset her both by the subject itself and by the tone in which it was carried on, but especially because she already knew the effect it would have on her husband, but she was too simple and innocent to know how to stop it, or even how to conceal the superficial pleasure which this young man's evident attentions caused her. She wished to put an end to the conversation, but did not know how. Whatever she did, she knew would be noticed by her husband and would all be construed into something wrong. And really, when she asked Dolly what was the matter with Masha and Vasenka, waiting for this uninteresting conversation to finish, gazed indifferently at Dolly, her question seemed to Levin a piece of unnatural and disgusting cunning. "Well, shall we go to pick mushrooms today?" said Dolly. "Yes, please, I will go too," said Kitty, and blushed. She had been going out of politeness to ask Vasenka whether he would go with them, but refrained. "Where are you going, Kostya?" she asked her husband, with a guilty look as he passed by with resolute steps. This guilty look confirmed all his suspicions. "The mechanic arrived during my absence, and I have not yet seen him," he answered without looking at her. He went downstairs, but had not had time to leave his study before he heard his wife's familiar footsteps following him with imprudent rapidity. "What is it?" he asked dryly. "We are busy." "Excuse me," she said, addressing the German mechanic. "I have a few words to say to my husband." The German was about to go out, but Levin said to him, "Don't trouble." "The train is at 3, asked the German. "I must not miss it." Levin did not answer him, but went out with his wife. "Well, what have you to say to me?" he asked in French. He did not look at her in the face and did not notice that she, in her condition, stood with her whole face twitching and had a pitiful, crushed appearance. I want to tell you that it's impossible to live like this. It's torture," she muttered. "The servants are there in the pantry," he said angrily. "Don't make a scene." "Well then, come here." They were in a passage and Kitty wished to enter the next room, but the English governess was there giving Tanya a lesson. Well, come into the garden. In the garden they came upon a man weeding a path, and without any longer considering that the man saw her tear-stained eyes and his excited face, or that they looked like people running away from some calamity, they went on with rapid feet, feeling that they must speak out and convince each other, must be alone together, and thereby both escape from the torment both were experiencing. One can't live like this. It is torture. I suffer and you suffer. Why? She asked. When they had at last reached a secluded seat at the corner of the Lime Tree Avenue. Only tell me this. Was there something improper, impure, degradingly horrid in his tone? He said, standing in front of her, in the same attitude as on that night, with fists pressing his chest. There was, she said in a trembling voice, but, Kostya, do you really not see that I am not to blame? From the time I came down I wanted to adopt a tone, but these people, why did he come? How happy we are, she said, choking with sobs that shook the whole of her expanded body. The gardener saw with surprise that though nothing had been pursuing them, and there had been nothing to run away from, and they could not have found anything very blissful on that seat, they passed him on their way back to the house with quieted and beaming faces. Alrighty, there we go, another chapter chaptered. Have your say about that chapter over at Chapter McClapter, Chapter Adapter Nanapter. See you tomorrow.